From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Listening to Coffee with Kenobi, you are, with Dan Z and Corey Club, the podcast you're looking for. This is. Yes.
For an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
At last! Where have you been?
Welcome to Coffee with Kenobi. Here are your hosts, Dan Z and Corey Club.
This is Dr. Travis Langley, at Superherologist on Twitter, the editor and lead writer of Star Wars Psychology, Dark Side of the Mind, and you are listening to Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z and Corey Club. This is the podcast you're looking for.
Joining us on Coffee with Kenobi is Dr. Travis Langley to discuss his insightful new book, Star Wars Psychology, Dark Side of the Mind. Dr. Langley is a professor of psychology at Henderson State University with a keen eye for understanding what makes our heroes tick. We are happy to have him join us for a quick cup of coffee. Welcome, Dr. Langley.
Well, hello. Welcome. Although I'm not a coffee drinker, I drink tea and Mountain Dew.
Oh, very good. So caffeine and hot beverages is a very good combination. We can certainly roll with that. And it's so happy, so nice to have you here because we're so fascinated by what makes these characters tick. So tell
hey,
us.
Hey, me too.
Yeah. Well, hey, it works out real well. So tell us, if you wouldn't, what drew you to the world of Star Wars in the first place, inspired you to write this fascinating new book?
Oh, what drew me to Star Wars? It's kind of a separate issue from the book, though, because, you know, I saw Star Wars in 1977 as a kid. So, you know, I saw it back then, and I was already a science fiction fan, though. So here I was, you know, this kid living in small towns or suburbs in the South, depending on where we were at the time, and feeling like, you know, I'm interested in these nerdy things, but nobody among my peers seems to be into them. And then Star Wars comes along, and it's the number one movie, the most successful thing, and it was amazing to me that this kind of thing that was interesting to me was the most popular thing. It's like I didn't know who all these Star Wars fans were, but it was very meaningful to me. It was a new hope for the nerdy child, and I've always loved Star Wars. You know, somebody asks, which do you like more, Star Trek or Star Wars? Well, it kind of depends on which side of my brain you're asking and when you're asking. But I had always thought of myself as a more of a Trekker, but I go, you know, there's something just more exciting about Star Wars. Star Wars, as a lot of the people who really know the background know, it was shaped by psychology itself.
Absolutely.
George Lucas, many influences figured in. Cowboy movies, Kurosawa films, much literature. But he was having trouble finishing his original story until he discovered the works of Joseph Campbell, and through that, Carl Jung's work on archetypes and the things that both of them had to say about the hero's journey and the universal themes of heroism that you find all over the world. And Lucas was like, this is the kind of story I'm telling. And so Star Wars was directly shaped by psychology. I wanted to do the Star Wars book several years ago when my Batman psychology book was first out. And was immediately a success. I wanted to do Star Wars Psychology Jedi Mind Tricks as the second book, but the publisher at that time was like, well, there's no new movie. I was like, but there will be. Star Wars always sells. But last fall, when I ran into my old editor at New York Comic Con, you know, I brought this up. You know, remember that Star Wars book I wanted to do? It is time. And we agreed. And to me, it is intriguing in many different ways. You know, it's not just a story with a whole bunch of running around. You have a lot of those stories. It's not just a special effects show. There are plenty of special effects shows that bomb in a big way. They'll bomb to the tune of $300 million now. it is intriguing, particularly because of these main characters and the little touches and the additional characters all over the place. You don't just have random droids. You see a droid getting tortured in the background. You see some other droid, you know, having a reaction, you know, to other behavior. So it's not just the main droids, even among them, of C-3PO and R2-D2. There's rich characterization among these mechanical forms all over the place. You know, as they become an analogy for groups that get prejudice against in our world, you know, the cantina scene, every viewer sees the irony of all of these many species when the bartender points at the droids and says, "We don't serve their kind." You know, here they are, these are these clearly sentient beings when everybody except the Skywalkers and Chewbacca seem biased against them.
I never thought about it that way.
Well, it's like you, Anakin and Luke both relate to them as sentient beings. Ben Kenobi, he's never been that concerned about them as sentient beings, even in some of the prequels. You know, it shows it's like he's not even that concerned about one that's been with him for years, you know, getting trashed. I can understand to some extent with the Jedi because they're in tune with every living thing, and those mechanical entities aren't part of that force that they're tuned into, and so it wouldn't feel like the same kind of entity to them. So I can understand that in some extent. And you also, who knows, some things may have happened back in their history where they had a rise of their machine. It's like, okay, we need to get these machines under control. Who knows? I love speculating on why do they treat the droids like that, even aside from the analogy to real world prejudice, as these species are intermingling and chatting with each other.
Well, you almost wonder if there's a bit of a holdover, or at least for the bartender, from the Clone Wars as well.
And then you get that. Of course, that's interpreting it after the fact, because when the original Star Wars came along, we didn't know what the Clone Wars would actually mean.
Correct.
It didn't sound like it was meant to be the Stormtroopers. And you watch those Stormtroopers with some variety in their voices. The original film, they weren't supposed to be a bunch of clones. So
that's right.
We can interpret it now that way, but that doesn't seem to be what was originally in there, because very clearly Boba Fett was not the person with the same voice as all those other Stormtroopers. Which, you know, it's like, why is Boba Fett popular? My daughter-in-law said, he's just a guy who falls in a hole. You know, but he had a cool look to him. Yes. But anytime we get to talking about why characters do things, you know, what they do and the meaning of their behavior, or when we argue that they're out of character, that is a psychological question. Fans look at the psychology of characters all the time. They just don't always use the words that I use for this stuff. We go through looking at these different characters and these stories, and they become analogies for real life, and we can get past the prejudice. If you're looking at, you know, a film about some particular real-world race or some group in a particular environment, you know, like in an inner-city setting or a third-world country, you go in with some pre-existing ideas about those groups. You know, even if you're not a particularly prejudiced person, you still have some pre-existing ideas that will shape your thoughts and your reactions. We go into science fiction, we can step aside from those and look more frankly at the bias, the prejudice itself. Now, that's just one example of the many different things we get into with Star Wars. Obviously, when you go into the light side and the dark side, you're looking at issues of what brings out the best and the worst in people. And the Jedi and the Sith, they can oversimplify it where they make it sound like it's all dark and all light. Well, why not the gray side? Plenty of fans will argue why there's not a gray side. You know, why not the chartreuse side? Why isn't there a chartreuse side to this? There are plenty of other emotions. And both the Jedi and Sith are very orderly. Anybody who's played Dungeons and Dragons, no, it's not all lawful good and lawful evil. There's also chaotic good and chaotic evil.
That's right. Well, the title itself says Dark Side of the Mind. Is this primarily focused on the more sinister characters, or is it just a clever play on Pink Floyd?
No. The Pink Floyd did figure in. But so that was actually my editor's suggestion. Well, I had wanted Jedi mind tricks, but you know, the word Jedi, it's a strongly trademarked word, and you need to be careful with that. It's you know, since it's not all about the Jedi, it would be a little harder to justify using the word. If it were more heavily about Jedi, then you can make the argument. But she suggested dark side of the mind, and I was initially reluctant because it's like, that sounds awfully negative. But I discussed it with some of my people contributing chapters, and they saw it as more of the Jungian sense, since there is some – we're not Jungians for the most part, but there is Jungian psychology in Star Wars. It's the dark side of the mind, even as Jung says himself, that's not the evil side. That is the unexplored, the hidden part of yourself. It can also be the best stuff in you. And that does ultimately tie into, you know, the big lesson of Star Wars when Luke sees past that dark surface in Darth Vader and believes that there is still light inside. For Darth Vader, that light still within him, his more heroic qualities were psychologically what was in the dark side of his mind.
I love that. That's fascinating. It's all the portrayal of and I know there's a lot you could say about masks as well. I've heard you on other podcasts before, and between you and Dr. Letamendi, we'd have quite a show.
Oh, and she's great too. We've done a number of convention panels together. And the masks, they're easy to talk about. We do get a little bit into mask when talking about the effects that they can have on characters like the stormtroopers and the de-individuating quality of those masks. They all look the same. Mm-hmm. And it makes the viewers more okay with them getting killed left and right, you know, just like blowing away robots. But the effect that they have on the stormtroopers themselves, they remove the individual qualities. They even remove perception of oneself as individuals when they're wearing these things. You know, these things with incredibly limited range of vision, you just kind of ignore that. You know, that's one of those things we just – it's part of accepting the fiction. You're suspending disbelief. It's like, how can they shoot anything? Well, stormtroopers aren't known for shooting anything. But although in A New Hope – Ben Kenobi looks at the blast and says, oh, no, only a stormtrooper will shoot that accurately, when we know stormtroopers can't shoot. But Ben's been out of touch. He might remember a generation earlier when they were all clones of Jango Fett. Now you've got copies of copies of copies, and you know what it's like.
And
when
people recruited. That's right.
And people recruited. And the Empire's a bit run down a generation later. You know, now these, you know, if somebody actually has skills, they can make money elsewhere as opposed to, it's the ones who, well, okay, can't shoot. So it's like, well, I'm not going to be any good making a living as a smuggler or a scoundrel out there. I'll go work for the Empire.
Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi. And we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes. You've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina. Trade with your friends and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
So you've talked a lot about some very important things that we like to analyze and dissect at Coffee with Kenobi. The idea of identity and the idea of the clones versus the stormtroopers. There's a lot of fascinating things that we could go on and on about it. But I'm interested right now in what are some of the biggest challenges that you faced when you started examining Star Wars universe for this book?
Making sure we've got a coherent kind of story tying it all together, even as we're talking about a lot of different kinds of psychology, you know, where we'll have a couple of people who are looking at some Jungian things. Like one of those writers was absolutely a Jungian. The other one was absolutely not, but he was still speculating on what might a Jungian say. But that's just, you know, two or three chapters where we get into that so much. You know, we get into issues of the characters. You know, we've got different people contributing chapters, and these often when you see these anthologies, they vary widely in their quality and the tone. And so with these, I write a lot more than the editor tends to do with these books. So editor and lead writer is the more accurate description for me on these, to help tie it together. And I work with the writers a lot along the way. We have our secret Facebook group where we share information and support each other to help it feel more like a team than it often is with these anthologies. And so just having that kind of feel where, you know, here's a book where you don't just feel like, oh, it could have just been a bunch of random magazine articles, where it does feel like, you know, there's a wholeness to this book somehow. That would have been really the biggest challenge, and it's an ongoing challenge as we go through. It was less of a challenge with The Walking Dead for some reason than it is with Star Wars, and with the upcoming books, Game of Thrones, Star Trek, later on next year. I'm not sure if I can announce the title, but there may be one involving a madman with a blue box from Gallifrey, which is pretty silly for me to say that if I can't announce the title, but okay.
Well, and so it's more, the challenge for you is more like the manner, not the matter, it sounds like.
With these, I mean, we're choosing our topics for specific reasons. I know there are people who look at this stuff and go, oh, you're just choosing it because it's popular. No, it's popular is why a publisher lets us talk about this stuff. But right, we're going with topics that are interesting to us and topics that we already feel we have something worthwhile to say in the psychology of it. So, you know, we're not going to be taking on it's either not that interesting or we don't think there's a real solid psychology story that we personally can tell. Like, we're not going to do the psychology of Twilight. And what I know of it, you could do it. So you could do one like, what's the psychology of this old guy who hangs around high schools? But you could get into these, and you could get into these things without mocking it too. But that's not what's in Twilight's is what's interesting to most of us. And so even if somebody could do it, there could be some other topics. There are some people will throw out like, what about Deadpool? I'm not sure about filling a book with the psychology of Deadpool because, you know, we don't have this well-known cast of supporting characters who are mainly seen as Deadpool characters. And also, how much does Deadpool psychology relate to real-world psychology? We need some others who are grounded in reality if we're going to deal with someone who's that far out there. Mm-hmm. So there are some things that are interesting to us that we don't feel we personally have the right psychology story to tell. So before we even get into writing these books, we already have a sense of these. My writers are generally people I know through doing convention panels together with them, or their Psychology Today bloggers. So all of them I know, they know their psychology. They know the popular culture topics. They know how to do it for a general audience where it's interesting and understandable, and they know how to do it quickly.
Always a plus. And for those of our listeners who are not familiar with the work of Carl Jung, could you kind of give us a real brief overview of what that means to be a Jungian psychologist?
Well, Carl Jung was a colleague of Freud's, although over the course of a couple of years they had a big falling out. And so he also was into what's going on in the unconscious mind. What he added to it was this idea of the collective unconscious, the idea that we've all inherited these archetypes, these universal themes, these ideas, you know, including heroism. You know, Jung looked at cultures all throughout the world and kept finding the same sorts of stories, the same patterns and stories of heroes all over the world, and he felt that it had been inherited. You can go arguing that, well, life circumstances will make these themes emerge, but as Jung saw it, it came out of an inherited unconscious. And then he influenced Joseph Campbell, who really got to pinning down specifically, you know, that hero's journey, building from the things Jung had talked about. There are other ideas Jung talked about, like introversion and extroversion. Those started with Jung, but because he's so spacey on some of his other areas, not everybody gives him credit in some of very well-known ideas that he has.
Well, and, you know, the things you're talking about, too, basically it all comes back to, when it comes to Star Wars, we're inspired by these characters, their hero's journey, what makes them tick, what makes them act and react or not act at all, depending on the situation. So for you, what does Star Wars teach us about the human condition?
that we need to look past the surface. Some of it has to do with that hero's journey you're talking about, like Han Solo. He has a very distinct journey from the scoundrel who won't stick his neck out for anybody to the guy who then does exactly that and progressively does more of it. Yeah, we see his journey. It's not. It might not be as obvious as like Darth Vader's journey, which is a pretty complicated thing. Mm-hmm. But I think the great lesson in Star Wars is to look past the surface. And I apologize to anybody who's heard me talk about this elsewhere, but I do think it is. It's like repeatedly, you know, the farm boy is the hero. The scoundrel will stick his neck out after all. The damsel in distress has to take over her own rescue.
Yes.
The big hairy monster who supposedly rips out arms. We never see him rip out arms. He's one of the most supportive characters. Who goes looking for C-3PO when 3PO's missing? Chewbacca. Who are the deadliest killers? The teddy bears. And what I said earlier about how Luke, looking past that dark surface on Darth Vader, sees something else inside that person. That ultimately is what wins the day. So repeatedly we have the lesson of look past the surface. People have more to them. They have more layers, which then does make it funny, the people who think it's like Star Wars is just about a bunch of running around. Yeah, look past the surface of Star Wars. There's a whole lot more to it.
I agree. I very much agree. And I'm glad you brought up Darth Vader. It would be impossible to talk about psychology without talking about one of the most popular characters, not only in Star Wars, but in all of the fictional world. But yeah, let's look at Anakin's turn to the dark side, which you've no doubt been asked about many times. Was the turn believable from a psychological and storytelling perspective when he went from Anakin to Darth Vader?
I don't know. I go over that. One, Darth Vader, it's hard for me to accept Anakin as Darth Vader because, you know, Darth Vader, you know, he looks cool and he acts cool. But then again, it's like, you know, that suit could make anybody look cool. Right. And the voice modulator that turns it into James Earl Jones's voice. You know, it's like, you know, I mean, maybe if we put, you know, Bob Denver, Gilligan in the Darth Vader outfit with a James Earl Jones modulator. Hey, there he goes. It is difficult. Of course, Anakin, we first meet as a kid of nine-ish. Who is sympathetic. He's empathetic. You know, he's one of the first to say we need to stick up for others. And it is difficult to believe somebody with that much empathy becoming a mass murderer. You look at someone kept murdering children. You look at the real world and the people who've done such atrocious things, you don't find them where they've had such strong empathy earlier they're in their lives. So that is a bit difficult to accept, although you do have to throw in the fact that he's got force magic messing with his head. And that could be comparable to drugs or brain injury affecting a person's state of mind. You know, I can take something called transcranial magnetic stimulation and use a magnetic field to activate or suppress areas of your brain. And so if we do that to people in a very specific area and they're looking at a moral dilemma, many of them fail to see what is morally wrong. Whereas if you don't have that magnetic field shutting off that part of their brain, they see the moral problem in the situation that they're looking at. So if something like that can offer a person's state of morality, you know, drugs can alter a person's state of mind where he used to be a good kid. Now he's just, you know, he's losing sight of what he's doing. Hmm. Then if you compare what happens to Anakin to that, you know, he's high on the force. You know, he's pumped up on more, getting more and more of the dark side. Then it's easier to see. But, you know, as somebody who – it's one of those things where those prequels don't quite match what we envisioned, you know, for what we knew of the history based on the original trilogy. And it always sounded very clearly like Anakin Skywalker was a lot older when Ben Kenobi met him. And so it seemed more likely that a grown man or maybe an older teenager at least had wound up drawing on the dark side, maybe as something tragic, maybe to help save the life of somebody else that he loved. But that's not the way it went. It was Palpatine manipulating him like Iago manipulating everybody in Othello. Right. And he ends up not really choosing. Characters all throughout the prequel, it's just very fortunate for Palpatine that everybody happens to make the stupid choices that lend themselves right to what he wants them to do. And he's manipulating everybody, even Yoda. They're all making the choices that Palpatine wants them to make, and it's a bit contrived, and it's moving a bit outside real world psychology. The animated series, like Clone Wars, you actually get to see greater depth with those characters in those historical periods. Mm-hmm. You get to see them make more choices, and it actually makes more sense when you go through that than just when you're watching the prequel films by themselves.
I agree. I think that the Clone Wars really added an incredible amount of dimension and layer to these characters that I found very helpful in trying to support some of these things that we talk about and analyze. And before we let you go, where can people purchase Dark Side of the Mind, Star Wars Psychology?
Oh, it's all over the place. It's you go to Barnes & Noble or any major retailer, they have them. The Barnes & Noble website, Amazon, Walmart.com has them. So these books are all over the place. And they can find me as @Superherologist on Twitter. And I'm easy to find on Facebook. Contacting me through Facebook is more reliable than email these days.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good to know, because we'll certainly need to have you on in the future to talk more about the psychology of Star Wars. And we'll have a link to this book, this amazing, insightful book, as well as your Twitter and any other good places people had to reach out to ask you a question or just say hello. But before we let you go, we need to ask you our five questions we ask each guest on Coffee with Kenobi to show the commonality among fans and fandom, to show that we, in fact, have much more in common than we do differently. So...
Oh, yeah.
We look at Dr. Langley, the first one for you. What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
A New Hope has a very special place. I mean, you can go through how, you know, Empire Strikes Back, a better film in many ways, but it's A New Hope. That's the one where I discovered it all. And in my head, the movie's name is Star Wars.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And what or who is your favorite Star Wars character?
You don't necessarily have to have a favorite. I mean, I can name some great ones. I can talk about why I like Luke. You know, people go, oh, Luke complains. See, Luke has reasons to complain.
Plus, he's a teenager.
This guy who, you know, should have been going off to college or off to other planets when his friends are leaving. I really like Luke.
And what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
I know.
Enough said, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
But which I know did I mean?
That's a good question. I'm naturally, I assume it's Empire, but many have come on the show and said Jedi. Mm. Can't go wrong either way, really. So if you collect Star Wars, that is, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
Oh, gosh. I guess my giant Millennium Falcon that's occupying a space in my office.
Is that the newer one that came out recently?
No. This one's about 20 years old. We put it together when my kids were young.
Oh, how awesome. Well, I'd love to see an image of that. So last one for you is, what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Oh, gosh, I feel like that's the main thing we've been talking about for this whole half hour, though.
Absolutely.
It's look beyond the surface. Everybody's more complex than you realize.
We have had over 100 guests. I don't think anyone has ever put it quite so loquaciously. I appreciate your insights into the Star Wars universe, as well as you sharing your time with us. And if you could, let listeners know again where they can get in touch with you if they want to ask you a question or just say hello.
@Superherologist on Twitter. On Facebook, go to facebook.com/DrTravisLangley. That's where they can find me.
Well, thank you again, Dr. Langley, so much. Be sure, everybody, to check out Star Wars Psychology, Dark Side of the Mind. We have a link to it in the show notes. And Dr. Langley, have a wonderful evening.
May the Freud be with you.
Chewie, get us out of here!
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Give the evacuation code signal.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.